Sensing a common theme today. Yes, we're talking about the moon. And coming up next, Claire Imamura and Steve Henriksen are here from the Alaska State Museum with a really fascinating tale about an incredibly cool possession over there at the State Museum that was brought back from Apollo 11. Steve, what is over there at the State Museum?
The State Museum isn't really known to house a vast collection of moon-related artifacts, but we actually have two pieces of the moon, one brought back from with Apollo 11 and the other from Apollo 17, so the first mission and the last mission. And these also have a small Alaska flag that was carried to the moon with both of those expeditions.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah. Did they do it for every state, or
that's part of kind of the worldwide attention that this got. Someone had the idea of sending small pieces of rocks to all the countries and all the states. So there's 50 state versions of what we have, and then 270 some odd ones that are in foreign countries.
Wow, that's really cool. So how much material did they bring back total on Apollo 11? Do you know how much?
On Apollo 11, they had, I don't know how much in weight, but they had two footlocker-sized trunks that was designed to carry back all these lunar samples, and they were triple sealed so that if there were any alien microbes that were among the rocks, that they wouldn't break out on Earth and cause a epidemic of some sort. So they were
body snatching. That's is right. What we're
that's
talking
right.
about.
You yeah. know what I'm talking
Pods.
About? Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly. So they were really careful about how they handled those, and they set up an entire building at the Johnson Space Center to house these samples. And initially, that was designed with airlocks, and it was all a controlled environment. So anything that got loose in the building couldn't then escape out. And if something did happen, their last resort was to bury the building with occupants. So that was kind of thankfully it never came to that.
As far as we know.
That's right, as far as we know. Yes. But I've actually seen the lunar receiving facility and the loading dock where they unloaded the samples. And it turns out that the chief of security for NASA at the time, whose job it was to carry the lunar samples from the aircraft carrier to Houston, he had to make a road trip for that. And until they actually, like the one of the last days of the expedition, they never gave any thought to security. And they were afraid that hippies would try to disrupt the transport of the moon rocks to embarrass Nixon.
Those hippies.
That's right. So the NASA chief of security said in his autobiography, he opened his desk drawer and took out his .38 special revolver and tucked it into his waistband. And so, you know, of course, now there'd be a convoy of military vehicles lined up. But in those innocent days, you know, all they needed was a .38
special. One guy
special.
With a .38. So that's fascinating. So we were presented this as part of what everyone was presented, but we haven't always had possession of this since we got it, right? So there is a tale about that moon rock. Tell me what happened with the life of that moon rock in the history of the State Museum?
Yeah, well, it made it. So Governor Keith Miller accepted the moon rock in a ceremony back in D.C. directly from Richard Nixon, carried it back to Alaska, and for a couple of years it traveled through the state as part of a campaign to share the moon rock with school children. And I think it went to a lot of schools, and there was indication that it went to a rock and gym collectors club meeting, and it was all over the place. And after that, it was housed in a branch of our museum in Anchorage that specialized in aviation and transportation. They had it on exhibit there, and there was a fire. And after the fire, it simply disappeared, and no one could ever figure out what happened to it. And there was some thought that there was an inside job involving some of the museum staff at that time, and they investigated, just didn't find anything. And when I started at the museum in 1988, my first week on the job, the former curator handed me this file and said, "Hey, this is on our missing moon rock. This is going to come up again."
It's a cold case.
That's right. It's a very cold case.
Yeah.
So fast forward to 2013, I think it was, we get the Attorney General's office got an email that was sent to me that said lawsuit for museum on the title. And I said, oh, this will be interesting. And I looked it up and they, you know, have you ever heard anything about a missing moon rock? And I said, yeah, actually, I have a whole file on it. So that started out the case. And after, I guess, about a year, we finally were able to bring it back to Alaska.
So do you know what was going on with the moon rock while it was gone?
Well, it's a long story. It was after the fire. It did survive the fire, but it was there's still a bit of mystery and I think fabrication of incidents directly after the fire. But supposedly the person that collected the moon rock thought he had permission to take it because it had been damaged in the fire and was considered worthless at that point. But you know, it's still a moon rock and.
It survived worse than a museum fire.
That's right.
It survived meteorites and all kinds of stuff for billions of years.
Yeah, exactly. So that a lot of it didn't hold water. And a part of my talk will go into detail about how we were able to prove that that was a moon rock, that was Alaska's, the authentic moon rock that Nixon presented, et cetera. But another part of it is just thinking about artifacts as evidence. And can we use artifacts from Apollo 11 to prove that it actually took place? There's a lot of people today.
Skeptic people.
People who are conspiracy theorists who believe it was a vast conspiracy and that people have been murdered about it. And
Capricorn 1. I saw Capricorn 1.
I did too.
I remember it.
That's right. I remember it like the back of my hand. It was. but there's actually a lot of ways to prove that it did happen. And you know, at this point, it's hard to believe that this is still an issue, but it is. And so I just thought I'd talk about the meaning of the artifacts from the mission. What are the artifacts that we have, and what can they tell us about the truth that the moon landing actually did place?
And about the makeup of the moon itself, and about those kinds of things as well.
Lots of other things, too, yeah.
Did they go through a disinfectant kind of process when they were brought back to Earth?
No, I think, you know, they kept them, and to this day, I was able to go into the lunar holding facility in Houston and pick up ours. And a lot of the rest of them are stored in vacuum chambers. They have not been exposed at all to Earth environment, so they're pretty pristine. And so they were just encapsulating them rather than trying to treat them. And there are a few that are exposed to the open air. In fact, in the Air and Space Museum, they have a small sample that you can actually touch.
Wow, so that's fascinating. Did Apollo 11? I'm sure this is probably an obvious answer, but they must have had to account for the weight of the moon rocks that they were going to bring back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything, even very lightweight things, were carefully weighed, and there wasn't a lot of tolerance for extra baggage, you know.
I heard there was 800-some pounds of moon rocks they brought back on that mission.
Something on that order. And so a lot of them are still in Houston, although they I asked them, you know, how do you when a scientist needs a specimen to do some test on, how do you actually get it to them? Do you have couriers or what? And they said, nope, you know, we just send them by registered mail. And, you know, they didn't put a value on them.
I was going to ask, is there a black market value on moon rocks?
Well, there is. In fact, and that was part of what we went into in this case. It turns out that any moon rocks from the United States, from the Apollo and other, and you know, any other samples that they'd gotten are the property of the government. Unless you are an astronaut and you, if you had one in your possession that someone gave you as a souvenir, President Obama signed an executive order saying that the astronauts have title to the artifacts that they may have brought back with them.
Mm-hmm. I see.
In terms of any of these official specimens, you private people cannot own them. There are some in private hands, though, that have apparently been sold out of Russia. And so they don't have as tight a control over the specimens there.
But, interesting.
You know, in fact, in our case, we got a lot of help from the U.S. Attorney and the NASA's, their own version of the FBI, the inspector general helped us a lot because they took it as a personal affront that someone was trying to you know claim ownership and sell these back. The lawsuit was the person that had them said he would return them, but he needed a finder's fee, and so they took it upon themselves mm-hmm. to make it their purpose in life to get the rocks back.
Yeah, interesting, fascinating. And then, what is the chemical or mineral makeup of moon rocks typically? Is there something where they is it, are they mostly made of granite or mostly made of some?
Yeah, I mean there's some variation to that, and I'm not a geologist, but we do have a geologist giving a program tomorrow,
oh,
Kathy Connor,
okay,
on
cool.
the geology of the moon.
Well, Claire, I'll turn to you to talk a little bit about the program of what's going to be talked about and when it is and all that.
Okay, yeah. Steve's talk is tonight at 5:30 at the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum, just across the street from here. And then tomorrow, which is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, we have a whole day of fun activities. From 10 to noon, there's some activities for kids in the museum galleries, and that's free with an accompanying adult's paid admission. And then at 1:30, we're going to show a film that was made in 1989 that was 20 years after the moon landing. So it's looking back at the moon landing, and we'll be looking back at the moon landing. And then at 2 p.m., Kathy Connor, she's a local geologist, will be talking about the geology of the moon and how it formed. So that will be your chance to learn all about the chemical makeup of the moon.
Yes, okay, yeah. Sorry to throw that one at you, but yeah. But, yeah, well, it's totally fascinating, and it's really amazing that we in Alaska happen to have this little extra piece of the story to our moon rock. It's pretty fascinating as well. Yeah. And I didn't ask about the Apollo 17th one. How did we come about that one? Same sort of process?
Yeah, the same sort of process. I think, in Apollo 17, they actually – they really planned this from the very get-go, and they collected a rock on the moon specifically for the purpose. I think the – Apollo 11 ones were just like what was left in the bottom of the footlocker when they got all the bigger ones out. But Apollo 17, there was a specific rock that Eugene Cernan had in mind that he picked up, and he said, you know, this is a composite rock of all different kinds of rocks from the moon, and that's sort of like all the nations on the Earth, and this is the one we're going to divide up among all the countries and states. And so when they got it back, it was separated out into the different, 300 and some different specimens, and then put in lucite and mounted on plaques with the flags from the states and countries that also flew to the moon.
Is the Apollo 11 one also mounted in a similar way? It's sort of encased.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're both very similar. And we have both of them are on permanent display in the museum all the time. But this is your chance to hear a little bit of the backstory.
Right.
And it is pretty interesting, too, from a legal standpoint, too, just some of the questions that came up. I think the Attorney General's office got a real charge out of dealing with this. In fact, everybody involved, it's not your everyday kind of thing to be involved in that you can bring back something from Apollo
11. This is the romance and intrigue of being a curator.
That's right.
That's right. This is what they write in the mystery novels.
Well, this is the only.
You're one of those creators that solves mysteries. It's one of those great. It's a.
That's right.
Well, anyway, you did solve this mystery. Or
no,
helped.
I did. I didn't.
You know about the story of solving the mystery.
But I did.
Yes.
I guess I did have.
You had a part of it. Yeah.
The belief that that someday it would come back, and we were loaded for bear as far as evidence. To use.
So. It is interesting that you were handed this folder and you just had it in the back of your mind. That one folder, that's going to be interesting. And,
yes.
And decades later is when it did come up as
that's
being
right.
something that was going to be interesting.
Well,
to
we
work
at
on,
the know. Alaska State Museum leave no artifacts behind.
Very good. Well, on that, that's a great way to leave this interview. Steve and Claire, thanks so much. Claire, one more time just to remind folks of when the different talks are happening through this weekend about the moon.
Sure. Steve's talk is tonight at 5:30, and Kathy Connor's is tomorrow at 2 p.m.
Sounds great. Steve, Claire, thanks to both of you for coming in, and a happy Apollo 11th moon day tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.